All right, Ed Fallon with you, folks, and Jeffrey Weiss in the studio with me. Jeffrey and I both go a long way back in terms of our advocacy for peace and diplomacy. And we've been talking about Iran and the disturbing developments over the past weekend and where that might go. And I want to talk about the broader need for a peace movement, which there used to be a very strong, powerful, vocal, effective movement in Iowa and in the U.S., That doesn't exist right now. I want to talk about that. But first, Jeffrey, just to wrap up our conversation about Iran, you kind of wonder, what is the long-term goal that the Trump administration has for Iran? I mean, like you pointed out, 90 million people, a huge country geographically. Mm-hmm. Is this just another bigger version of Afghanistan potentially?
No, I mean, Colin Powell famously said with another illegal invasion in March 2003 of Iraq, but he said, we do deserts, we don't do mountains. Iran is about impossible to invade. It's, you can look at it on a map in terms of it's protected by literally thousands of miles of mountains and on three areas and then pretty much water on the other. So the idea that you're going to change the government without having boots on the ground, that you're going to sort of bomb your way to an uprising which will topple the government, it isn't reasonable by any stretch of the imagination. So if regime change is the goal and the administration feels like, well, you can do it in Venezuela, you can do it anywhere, which wasn't even regime change, it was just changing the face of the government, then it doesn't seem likely. But nobody really knows how this is going to turn out, and it could be in the long run that the labor movement, the student movement, the women's movement, and those things for more democracy in Iran may be the movements that will be set back the most, because some of those movements had made some gains over the years. It's very difficult, though, what some countries are finding out. The United States right now is at war with Cuba. I mean, it's a blockade. It's considered to be an
act of war. We've been at war with Cuba in one way or another for decades.
Yeah, absolutely. And right now, the goal is essentially, to starve Cubans to death, similar to starve Palestinians to death. And it's essentially collective punishment of a population so that they change their government, which, if we're honest about it,
is against the law.
Well,
against international law.
It's not
against
that
morality.
Much different than the logic of the 19 hijackers, which was to, cause pain to civilians to get them to change policy.
You mean for 9/11?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the logic, it's the logic itself is not that much different, to make civilians suffer to change policy. And, not only is it a cruel and often illegal policy, it doesn't, I mean, we have a vision, a lot of us, of a country that has, diplomacy, that isn't in a perpetual state of war, that doesn't have an empire military bases or a permanent war economy where people can't pay for health insurance, education is too expensive, we have homeless people on the street, and yet, Lockheed Martin and a number of our corporations are, you see their stocks go right up as we, fire more munitions on civilian populations. And there could probably be better ways of spending money than that.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I think it comes back to this. There are big industries that are benefiting from the type of adventurism we're seeing in Venezuela, Iran, and probably other places.
Absolutely.
And oil is on top of the list. But the weapons manufacturers.
Absolutely.
I mean, how rich are Lockheed and Halliburton and other corporations getting because of our extensive involvement with international conflict?
Yeah, absolutely. And you talked about in terms of peace movements too. Responding to that, one of the difficulties is it's sometimes hard to get United States citizens to care as much if U.S. soldiers are not paying the price.
I mean, so you think that was one reason Vietnam?
Vietnam
saw such a vibrant peace movement.
Oh, definitely. Well, and that went on from 1956 to 1975. And you also had a number of, you had the draft. I mean, people were affected and lots of different. I mean, when you have working class people who have to do tour after tour after tour, it's really a situation where they feel they're at war because they have all these deployments, but that the country isn't. The country,
isn't that happening?
Do you remember when George Bush Jr. famously said, "You guys all go shop, and we'll use these working class kids for deployment after deployment after deployment"? And a lot of these kids have PTSD. You know, they have trauma from war, and you know,
and injuries.
Absolutely, and from a moral standpoint, it's funny. I was at a peace demonstration recently, and I was interviewed by the news, and somebody said, "Will it be on the air?" And I said, "No way," because they asked me why I was here, and I said, "Well, I was raised, you know, the values of Jesus of nonviolence, and I think that spending money on healthcare and education is better than, you know, bombing second grade girls." And then I said, "Well, that's, you know, I'm not going to be on," but you know, I get it.
Right.
because media wants a, you know, what do you say to the administration, and they want a both sides, even though there's never two sides to a story. So you know, it's more like World Wrestling Entertainment than news. So part of what that is an answer to you though is we don't really have an avenue to put forward a moral argument. I mean, Christian nationalism and you know, and militarism and right-wing authoritarianism controls so much of the, sort of the airwaves that you don't get Jesus as, you know, the moral message.
You know, and I understand that the vibrant peace movement of the 1970s and 80s and early 90s grew out of opposition to the Vietnam War because so many people were coming back, so many Americans were coming back in body bags, but also because there was so much footage being released of the horrors being committed against the Vietnamese people. And, you know, there's no shortage of horrors being committed across the world right now. Certainly Gaza has horrified many, many people. And the story about the schoolgirls being killed in Iran is horrifying.
Yeah.
But maybe part of it is we've become somewhat desensitized. And maybe another part of it is we don't sense that our rage or opposition to war is going to have any significant impact. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and to that I say, well, back in the 80s, it did. I mean, we had U.S. senators like Tom Harkin who were vocal about their opposition to war. And that, you know, that vocal opposition led to policy that was, I mean, we had an end to nuclear testing that grew out of the peace movement of the 1980s. We had divestment initiatives. I mean, there was a campaign to stop investing in, to stop purchasing General Electric products because of their role in producing nuclear weapons. That was effective.
Yeah.
The movement against apartheid in South America, South Africa, rather.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you know, that while somewhat tangential to some of the more direct concerns about war and peace, that was certainly a victory.
Mm-hmm.
I think we forget that these things do have an impact. But what's going to inspire people to get involved today, to be able to mobilize in an organized, concerted, you know, effort to bring about the kind of changes in policy that we really need if we're going to have a world that's less war-torn?
Well, I mean, it depends how long this goes. I mean, it has to be personal to people. I mean, the sanctuary movement within Catholic churches in the 1980s, you know, in opposition to the death squads that our government was supporting in Guatemala and El Salvador and the Contra War in Nicaragua, was in part because they were killing Catholics. So it was very, I mean, as somebody who grew up Catholic, I mean, that would be personal to me, that our government is supporting people who, you know, assassinate Archbishop Romero. And so it's poor personal. So, you know, we don't know where this is going to go. However, there have been anti-war and peace demonstrations taking place already. I mean, the war just started and there have been several, and there's several in a number of cities. There's been one, there's at least two or three already in Des Moines.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. One of the things is the wars oftentimes are quick, you know, and so it isn't like Vietnam, which was 19 years. In Afghanistan was this long occupation that was behind the scenes that, you know, so it's, It's really interesting living in a country, you know, there's 193 countries in the world, but we're the only country in the world that, at least in my lifetime, that has been in a state of perpetual war always, you know, that there isn't any rest from it. And it's kind of sometimes important to remind U.S. citizens of this, that this isn't normal. There's 193 countries and there's 192 that haven't experienced nonstop war since I was born in the 1960s.
That said, there are plenty that are at war right now.
Not that many. I mean, only a couple. There's only a couple interstate wars. I mean, it's,
a dozen?
Maybe a dozen.
But a dozen. I mean, isn't that part of you? We see protests. Mm-hmm. And they move from concerned about opposition to what's happening in Ukraine, to Gaza, to Venezuela, to Iran. And it's like whack-a-mole. There's so many different interventions and conflicts, and all the conflicts that don't even make the news. Congo, Myanmar.
Absolutely.
I mean, so many other places where you've got it's hard to know. Yeah. Here's what I want to say.
I mean, these are conflicts that should be seen as conflicts, not as security issues. And they really cannot be solved by violence.
Right.
Almost all of them.
And I think, to me, the one thing that has really hit the public nerve in terms of inspiring, people to think about peace is the recent Buddhist monk walk, 2,300 miles from Texas to Washington, D.C. I mean, that literally inspired millions of people to turn out, and many of them in tears. Mm-hmm. And it just showed the deep hunger that we have in this country for an end to war, an end to conflict, for the development of peace internally, but also among those we associate with, either in our own neighborhoods, but certainly across the globe. They hit a nerve.
The base, the voting base of both of our two major parties right now is not pro-war.
Yeah,
and right. Yes, we do have, I don't know, maybe 30 to 50 million people in the United States who agree with what the president said the other night, that, we are God's chosen people and that God calls on us. We don't often call on God. When God has somebody to call, he calls us, and that we are divine providence. And if you have that level, if you think you are God's chosen people, there's a lot you can do, and it's not all good. Yeah. And so, we also have and similar to Israel, we have a religious fanaticism, and we have an alliance being made between a couple of countries for, the return of the Messiah, So, we shouldn't overlook this, because, our religious extremism and fanaticism is in some ways surpasses some other countries.
So there's an event coming up here in Des Moines in the near future, that this weekend, in fact. Again, if you're elsewhere in the country listening to this program, maybe you've got something similar going on. But here we have an event sponsored by the Catholic Peace Ministry. It's the Dingman Bishop Dingman Peace Award, referencing Bishop Morris Dingman, who was the bishop here back in the 80s.
Yeah, who was a voice of peace.
And he was amazing. He was so vocal and yet so accepted within the church hierarchy.
A little bit
as well.
Like Pope Leo and Pope Francis.
Yeah, I'd say a lot like him, yeah. And the award, every year somebody gets an award, and this year it's the Humanitarian Operations and Public Education Foundation. They work in Iowa City. They have been trying to relieve the suffering in Gaza. They provided cooking utensils, toiletries, household essentials. And, they've been dealing with overcrowded tents, poor sanitation, all these things that they've been trying to address to the extent that they can. And it'll be good that a group working on that has received.
Yeah, Saturday at Holy Trinity Catholic Church.
Yeah, Saturday, March 7th, I believe. Yeah. Anyway, I think we got a long ways to go to build the kind of peace movement that we had here in the 1980s that really did, do not ever forget, it accomplished a lot. And right now we need to accomplish a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thanks, Ed.
Folks, I've been talking with Jeffrey Weiss. Jeffrey is the political science prof at Des Moines Area Community College. Thanks for joining us.